To date, Indigenous people account for roughly 60% of the missing person cases in South Dakota. Michelle Elbow Shield, age 26, went missing on September 27, 2023. It is believed she was in the Sioux Falls, South Dakota area when she was last seen. This is the story of Michelle Elbow Shield.
Hey guys, this is Ash.
This is Shiashi.
This is Maggie, and you're listening to We Are Resilient. That was better. We sound at least awake. Thank God we didn't do this at 9.
All right. How do you want to get started?
So if you guys remember, a few weeks ago, I sent you an article that was really concerning, and it had like a number of missing people on it from South Dakota. And that article was only brought to my attention because we got a listener request. And what I've learned based off of like what's going on in South Dakota is really alarming. So today's episode, we're going to just talk a little bit about what I've learned about this issue, and we'll cover one case in particular, but there's not a lot of information about this one case I do have.
Yeah, that's pretty much on par with how these cases go. There's really not a lot of information out there, but I'm really glad that you're highlighting Rapid City because we've covered a lot of cases from there, just like we've had to cover a lot of cases from Northern California. So it's good that you're calling attention to this.
And I feel like with Rapid City, it's becoming more and more prevalent, it seems like. Mm-hmm. So that's what's really concerning to me is like it feels like cases are on the rise.
That's scary.
So Indigenous people account for roughly 60% of the missing person cases in South Dakota. There are multiple federally recognized tribes in South Dakota, including the Standing Rock Reservation, Rosebud Reservation, Cheyenne, and Oglala Sioux Reservation. According to the South Dakota Missing Persons Clearinghouse, since January 1st, 2024, there have been 45 missing person cases that are still active. 40 of these 45 cases are teenagers.
45 cases since January this year.
Yes.
How is this not national news?
That's part of the issue. What's even more concerning is 40 of the 45 cases since January 1st are teenagers, children.
I think this is what's blowing my mind. 40 teenagers, children, have gone missing since January and nobody's sounding the alarm.
Literally no one has even heard about it.
Are they all from the same area?
Yes, they're all from Pennington County. There's 34 missing individuals from Pennington County alone.
Oh, wow.
So Rapid City is in Pennington County. So I wanted to just briefly, well, this isn't going to be brief because there's 40, briefly cover some of the missing persons on this and give you their ages and how long they've been missing because it is so scary. South Dakota legislators do realize how prevalent this epidemic is in their state. And they have set up a missing persons database that is specific to South Dakota, which is terrible that they've had to do this, but at least, you know, they're trying to make some efforts. But I think what's so concerning is that a lot of the people on this missing persons database, their cases are still unsolved. So even though they're on the database, it just seems like no one's really working hard to find answers about where these people are.
There's not an urgency, is what you're saying. I don't want to point out the obvious, but if it was 40 missing non-natives in one particular area,
if there were 34 missing white people in general from one county, this would be national headlines.
Oh, it would be.
People would be like, is there a serial killer? You know, they would be making all these speculations. But because it's Indigenous people, it seems like people are just writing it off. Now, I wrote this story last week, so that it's likely that this number has increased because as of today, there are 1, 2, 3 missing persons cases from yesterday.
Okay. 3 from yesterday.
Yeah.
I'm just having a hard time processing the numbers here.
Shoshi, it feels multiple people every day.
I think that's what's freaking me out is the fact that there's so many and this is the first I'm learning about it. Nobody's heard about this and no one... I don't understand.
I know. And it's what we talk about when we do our presentation of just the stark difference in when two non-Indigenous mothers go missing, and the news covers their story from the day they're missing until they're found and helps solve their case. But when it's Indigenous people, they don't get the same effort. And we're thankful that all the other cases are getting solved, but why don't Indigenous people get that same attention?
We've been asking that question since day one.
So let me just briefly go through here and list the names and the ages of these people and how long they've been missing.
Okay.
Josiah Hornbeck, missing since April 20th, 2024, only 17 years old. Rayanne Witt, missing since April 20th, 2024, 41 years old. That case in particular is Rapid City. Roger Mowry, missing since April 20th, 2024, 69 years old, from Sioux Falls. Jocelyn Thaler, missing since April 19th, 2024, 17 years old. Valaria Twiss, missing since April 18th, 2024, 14 years old, from Rapid City. Elijah Walters, missing since April 18th, 2024, 16 years old. Rikor Nyrene, missing since April 14th, 2024, 14 years old. Mario Ponce, missing since April 12th, 2024, currently 15 years old. Fantasia Blue Thunder, missing since April 11th, 2024, 15 years old. And both of those are from Sioux Falls. Abby Vogel, missing since April 11th, 2024, 17 years old. Grace Long Soldier, missing since April 11th, 2024, 17 years old. Janae Mitchell, missing since April 9th, 2024, 16 years old. Aquilina Lee, missing since April 9th, 2024, 16 years old. Xavier White Whirlwind, missing since April 8th, 2024, 13 years old. Jessica Sloan, missing since April 6th, 2024, 41 years old. Brennan Diebolt, missing since April 5th, 2024, 17 years old. Brunel Whiteface, missing since March 31st, 2024, 16 years old. Consuelo Summers, missing since March 29th, 2024, 14 years old. Isabel Whitecalf, missing since March 28th, 2024, 17 years old. Evan Brown, missing since March 23rd, 2024, 17 years old. Joanna Bentz, missing since March 22nd, 2024, 59 years old. Miracle Morgan, missing since March 21st, 2024, 15 years old. Katara Martinez, missing since March 21st, 2024, 14 years old. Kiara Martinez, missing since March 21st, 2024, 16 years old. Jessica Wounded Shield, missing since March 16th, 2024, 12 years old. LeBron Lawrence, missing since March 15th, 2024, 17 years old. And there are pages and pages and pages of these missing people, and most of them are teenagers. No more than, you know, from the ages of 11 to 17, children who haven't been seen or heard from for months, and you haven't heard a single thing about it. One of the cases we received as a request from a family member, which is what brought this issue to my attention, the case of Michelle Elbow Shields is similar to most of the cases on this list. Just like the majority of the cases we cover on this podcast, information regarding Michelle's disappearance is limited. But fortunately, there was information posted on a missing persons worldwide Facebook page, which reads, Michelle Elbow Shields, age 26, went missing on September 27th, 2023. It is believed she was in Sioux Falls, South Dakota area, and was last seen in between early October to mid-December of 2023. Michelle is from the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota and is a Ogallala Sioux. Michelle has light brown eyes and brown hair. She is 4'10" and weighs approximately 100 pounds. Michelle also has tattoos. One is a butterfly on her left ankle, an infinity symbol on her left arm with the names Michelle and Cody Redwing, with a heart and devil horns behind her right ear. Michelle was last seen wearing a black, blue, and gray sweater and black jeans. She had always remained active and updated her social media posts. Her family has been unable to contact her since she disappeared. Michelle was last known to be staying with friends in Rapid City, South Dakota. She was last seen with Guermilio Calderon, also known as Memo. It has been reported that Memo was arrested in January in Waterloo, Iowa, but Michelle was not with him. According to a Rapid City Police Department press, numerous leads have been followed up on to locate Michelle, and detectives are also working with the BIA, with the Missing and Murdered Unit, the OST Department of Public Safety, and the Pennington County Sheriff's Office. So if you guys recall, this is very similar to the story of Kimberly Iron. So Kimberly Iron was only 21 years old when she left her home on the Crow Indian Reservation in Montana. It was October 2020 when her father received a phone call from her, and she has not been seen or heard from again. Kimberly's father, Curtis, recalls receiving a number of strange calls from his daughter in the week before her disappearance, and each call seemed to come from a different number and location. The first of these strange calls came from his daughter when she stated she was in Las Vegas, Nevada on September 22nd. She called to tell her dad that her boyfriend had been arrested and that she wanted to come home but didn't have any money. The call ended before Curtis could get any more information from Kimberly. A few days later, Kimberly called again, but this time she was in Oxford on her way to Long Beach, California. Curtis recalled that in both phone calls he received from Kimberly, she was in tears over the phone, saying that she was crying and very upset and that she was just trying to get home. But the calls always ended before they could figure out exactly where she was. Curtis did an interview with Dateline and said, "It's not like her just to take off like this. She wouldn't leave her kids. Something isn't right. If she's safe, then all she would have to do is tell the police, but that's not happening. So to me, something is wrong." He believes that his daughter is being held against her will and fears that she may be a victim of a sex trafficking ring. So when I was doing research on this area and what's happening and, you know, why this could be happening, I learned that Rapid City, South Dakota is one of the top 10 cities with the highest number of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, cases that are not in law enforcement records. According to a report issued by the Great Plains Tribal Health Organization, sex trafficking is very prevalent in this area. They reported some staggering statistics in regards to what they found out about sex trafficking. They found the life expectancy is 7 years for sex trafficking victims. The odds of escape of sex trafficking is 1 in 100.
Oh my gosh. Oh my God.
Yep. And they learned that 12 to 14 is the average age of entry into sex trafficking in the United States.
That's so scary.
The article talks about ways that sex traffickers target their victims, including using opioids, meth, and other drugs as weapons to steal Indigenous people. Human trafficking is modern-day slavery where people are forced to work or provide services. So we've talked about this before, and it might have been in the Kimberly Iron case, but we've talked about how people view sex trafficking a lot of times as prostitution. But that's not what it is. So, Ash, when you asked, you know, if a lot of these cases are runaways, probably so. But what's concerning about that is in an area where sex trafficking is so prevalent, sex traffickers will also target people who are in vulnerable situations or circumstances and promise them a better life. So they may be thinking, you know, oh, I'm going to go to California like Kimberly Iron and they're going to give me a job and they're going to teach me how to do this and I'm going to make my life better. But in reality, they get forced into this sex trafficking ring. And I can't find any evidence that that's what's happened to those teenagers. But based off of what's happening in this area, you just have to wonder.
Yeah, it's so scary that these girls and boys, right? Because, you know, boys on that list, they're just gone. Like, even if they ran away or they were taken, you don't know where they are as children. Well, and that's terrifying. Yeah.
And that's what, even if they're, a lot of times it seems like if a teenager runs away, it's written off, right? Like, oh, you know, they just ran away. Okay, but they're still out there with no resources and no parents and they're a child.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you imagine living in that area? I'd be afraid to let my kids go anywhere without me.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, put a curfew in effect and make everybody just stay home.
I know these reservations out there don't have a lot of resources, but I can't remember what story it was. But do you remember the story where local men in the community shut down their reservation and would volunteer to run security to get in or out of the reservation?
I don't recall hearing about that one.
I'll have to look and see where that was at. But the law enforcement just did not have the resources. So the men of this community knew that their people were being targeted and they did volunteer shifts of like security at the reservation of checking people who were coming on and off the reservation, making sure that they saw who was coming in and out. But what's terrible is based off of the statistics, it's evident that Indigenous people are still targeted in sex trafficking. This report probably hasn't been done again, but in 2015, the National Congress of American Indians found that an estimated 40% of women victims of sex trafficking identified as American Indian, Alaskan Native, or First Nations. 40%.
Wow.
And I don't know that we've said this here, but what's so concerning about that number, 40% of all sex trafficking in the United States, and Native American and Indigenous people only make up 2% of the population.
We make up a staggering number of the statistics.
We're talking about a genocide.
It's exactly a genocide.
I mean, we don't know that these people aren't alive, but based off the facts that the life expectancy is 7 years for sex trafficking victims and the odds of escape are 1 in 100, I mean, it seems pretty hopeless. So here is my hope that, one, we can bring this attention to light. I am like going to be banned from Chris Cuomo's Instagram page because every time he posts a missing person page, I say, Chris, please cover more Indigenous cases. Every time. Because, not because I don't want him to cover the other cases, but it is so bad. And I am so mad about it.
Yeah, there's definitely something going on in South Dakota with all these cases.
The ones I read, and I read probably 20 names. They were all from April. And it's only April 21st. It's not even the end of the month.
And that doesn't include the ones that are missing from earlier in the year, last year, year before.
And I guess I hope, so the cases that I read, not every single one is Indigenous, because as you guys know, there's not a lot of data. So when someone goes missing, you literally see the name, the age, what county they were missing from, and maybe you'll see a picture. You don't even really know, based off the information on that, on the South Dakota Missing Persons database, which ones are Indigenous, unless you kind of, you know by their last names. It's not reported. Mm-hmm. And the BIA doesn't pick up every single missing persons case. We know that. So there's people on that list who are probably non-Indigenous. So I guess my hope is that maybe if we somehow combine them all together and just raise awareness about the issue in South Dakota, that it will help elevate the Indigenous cases. But it shouldn't take that.
No, it shouldn't. These are people. It should be priority no matter what.
So the Great Plains Tribal Health Board did a really good article in regards to missing and murdered Indigenous women, opioids, and sex trafficking. It talks about what is human trafficking. Sex trafficking is the recruitment, harboring, transportation, provision, or obtaining of a person for a commercial sex act in which the commercial sex act is induced by force, fraud, or coercion, or in which the person induced to perform such act has not attained 18 years of age. The trafficked people may receive just what's necessary to live, such as food, water, shelter, while the money earned by their work goes to the traffickers who control them. It talks about how drugs are being weaponized. We know that in Indigenous communities, there is a prevalence of mental health and substance use disorders based off of historical trauma and generational trauma that has affected our people. We are more susceptible to these diseases, and human traffickers use that as bait to recruit people. They go after people who have substance use disorders. They use drugs to force victims to obey their orders, work harder, or for longer hours. Commonly used substances are tobacco, alcohol, hallucinogenics. In particular, they use heroin and methamphetamine, which are particularly addictive substances. The drugs are often used to induce compliance, to create a dependency, to feed a habit, punish an unwilling victim, to help them cope with the stress of sex trafficking, or to lure in a vulnerable individual and criminalize a victim. And they can even be used to incapacitate a victim. What's scary about this article is it gives people tips on how to fight back.
You mean if they're snatched, how to fight back?
Kind of. So the article talks about understanding, you know, your local community. And in this case, I think it is really important that we raise awareness on how dangerous this area is, even for people visiting. You know, like you said, if you had kids in this area, like, you should be monitoring them at all times, because you just never know what's going to happen. It talks about learning where the missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls hotspots and trafficking hotspots are. For example, as we talked about, the 190 highway across South Dakota is considered a trafficking corridor. That's why the numbers in South Dakota are so high. And I guess what's even more concerning about that is this kind of brings to light a lot of issues that we talk about, right? So not only is this something that you've never heard about, but because there's not good data collection and a formalized database for missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls cases, you would never know how prevalent it really is. The numbers that we're seeing, there's no way that covers everyone that's missing.
Yeah, that's very true. It's just not being talked about or covered.
And we all know that we've barely even scratched the surface to how bad this problem really is.
And you could speculate and we can assume.
Yeah.
But you have no idea just how bad it is. So when it talks about finding, you know, ways to fight back, and in this article, it does mention that one way that we can help is by help bringing back missing relatives by reposting and sharing missing persons posts as soon as you see them. And we say that all the time. There's so many, you know, even just one share could increase that visibility for that person. If 10 people see it, you know, that's at least 10 people that could be looking out for that person in this area. It also mentioned this article that 1 in 5 youth who run away or are homeless is a victim of human trafficking. So we know that in these rural areas for tribes that do not have the resources, that homelessness and runaways are more common because they're just looking for a different or better life, or they may not have resources. It says it is critical to get our children to safety as quickly as possible, regardless if they willingly left.
Yeah, they're still children. They're not mature enough to make those decisions about what they should do, how to navigate life. And so they may think of running away as an escape, and then they never come home.
And they don't have resources. And children are trained and taught to trust adults. And we're having to retrain our children that not all adults are safe. Human traffickers commonly seek children who are alone, isolated, impoverished, rebellious, come from an abusive / fractured home, or have emotional and physical needs. And like you're saying, Ash, it does mention that the kidnappers exploit children's dreams by making false promises of wealth, gifts, freedom, and love. Yeah. Typically, it's more common to be targeted for youths who are in foster care or homeless because they're at more risk. But in this article, what's so scary, it says any teen or child hangout area might be targeted, such as schools, malls, movie theaters, bowling alleys, parks, concerts, and parties. And that is so scary to me as a mom of a teenager, because I, you know, like, it's not uncommon for me to drop my teenager who is 14 years old off at the movie theater with his friends. Can you imagine dropping your teenager off at the movies, going to pick them up, and they're just gone and you never see them again?
Yeah, that's a terrifying thought. I mean, and then we have the casino that's here in our town. Mm-hmm. We're not blind to that as grown women, I guess you could say. Like, we know that a lot of things go on there that shouldn't go on there. And people are there that we don't want our kids around.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I have that same fear. You drop your kids off and you expect to come pick them up an hour later and they're not there. And I'm bad. I'm not bad, but I do it. Like, if I drop my kid off, I kind of hang out in the parking lot and just wait, because I want to give him that freedom.
Yeah.
I want to be around. Does that make sense? And I'm not, if I'm a helicopter mom, I'm a helicopter mom, but I have peace of mind at night, you know? But
though, I'm 100% a helicopter mom.
It's awful that we have to be that way.
Think about how we grew up. I can recall, and times have changed, and the internet has made things great, but it's also made things really, really scary. I can recall when I was younger, and I was probably like 8 or 9, my parents, my grandparents would let me literally ride my bike down the road, probably a mile, to go to my friend's house. And the only thing I would have to do was call them, let them know I made it there. And then I wouldn't come back until dark and they would not hear from me.
Yeah.
And that's just not possible today.
No.
Like, you cannot do that.
No. So I get what you're saying. Like, it's very different from when we grew up, because it's a scarier world now. I don't even let my kids spend the night with people, and because I'm just, I don't know.
You just never know.
Yeah. You don't.
Another thing it says to be aware of in regards to your children is just how prevalent people being targeted on social media is.
Oh, yeah.
In this article, it mentions that a survey of 10 to 17-year-olds revealed 46% admit to having given out their personal information to someone they did not know, because online predators typically pose as children close to the age of the victims, and then they'll travel to meet the children based off the information they get.
And it's like, who thinks like that, you know? But there are people that do. There's a lot of people that do. I read something one time, and it's been a while, but it talks about, and it could be young men too, but it talked about young women, girls, and it asked, how old were you the first time you felt sexualized by an older man? And a lot of the answers were like 9, 10, 12, really young. And that's terrifying. Mm-hmm. And if we all think back on our lifetimes, at what age were we actually sexualized or experienced some type of comment or look from an older man? at a very young, inappropriate age. And I'm not saying that something happened, but I'm just saying that you received something that just didn't feel right. And I think as women, we probably all experienced that, even if we didn't experience it till we were teenagers. But grown men, you know, showing that interest in young girls at a young age, very inappropriate.
I think about, too, how many stories I've seen come out in the media lately where teachers are targeting students. You know, it's like adults that they should trust are the ones that are taking advantage. And it's like, how do you even teach your kids like who they can trust? Another part of this article talks about a way to keep yourself and your children safe is to download a personal safety app such as Silent Beacon, which I haven't heard of, One Scream, or a free version of Be Safe. So none of those I've heard of, but I'm going to look them up and see what they are. But I also use Life 360 on my phone for my kids, both of them. So anytime they leave anywhere, when they're driving, if they go over a certain speed, you know, you get a notification. And typically they always have their phone. So to me, that helps me just have some peace of mind.
Yeah, I agree. It's a very useful app.
Another option it says to keep yourself safe is practicing self-defense techniques or carrying legal self-defense items such as a flashlight or pepper spray. And lastly, it says create lifelines. Check in regularly with your friends and relatives, especially if you or they are attending large events, traveling alone, spending time alone, or being with someone you or they don't know well. Keep up with each other's activities and relationships. Always know who's around your children. Always know as much as you can about your children's friends or relatives' significant others. And I think that's really important. But listen to this, and this makes me so mad. So again, this is done by Great Plains Tribal Health, and it's targeted toward Indigenous people. And one way it says to keep yourself safe, create an If I Go Missing folder for yourself and each of your children.
What?
It's not that we don't have enough to worry about already.
Well, it's not wrong.
It just feels really unfair.
It is unfair because do you think white privileged people are making an If I Go Missing folder?
Absolutely not.
No, they're not. But because of how Indigenous people get treated by society and the media, it says to create a folder. That way, if you or your children go missing, you can be identified. It says to put clear recent face photos, copies of your fingerprints, online and personal technology logins, social media passwords, bank account numbers so people can track you, dental and medical records, a copy of your driver's license, photos of any identifying scars or tattoos, names and addresses of places you frequent, handwriting samples, vehicle information, the layout of your typical daily routes, cell phone and laptop serial numbers, name and descriptions of relationships with the people you're closest to, contact info for your family members and closest friends.
That's just scary to think about.
It's absolutely terrifying.
I don't even know if I could do that.
I mean, thankfully for us, you know, we have friends and family who we're close to, right? Like, first of all, if I went missing, I would expect each of you to go to the world's end to find me.
We got your back, Jack.
Okay, good. And my boyfriend's a detective, so if I go missing, we're in big trouble, because if he can't find me, nobody will. But what I do want to make sure we do is, the reason that I was made aware of this case is because a relative of Michelle Elbow Shields reached out to us on our podcast page. And we're thankful for that, because we would have not been made aware of this issue. He wrote that he's an enrolled member of the Oglala Sioux Tribe in Pine Ridge, South Dakota, which has unfortunately been featured on a few of our episodes. He wrote, another young lady has gone missing from Pine Ridge. There is a little bit of information listed on the following link. I knew her as a child when she was being cared for by my acquaintance. I hope everything turns out well for Michelle and her family, but any publicity would be greatly appreciated. So I'm going to end the story by recapping the story of Michelle Elbow Shield. She went missing in September of 2023. And was last known to be in Rapid City, South Dakota. She is described as having brownish-colored hair, brown eyes, and was last seen wearing a blue sweater and black jeans. The Rapid City Police Department and BIA, OJS, Missing and Murdered Unit, are seeking information that may assist them with the ongoing search. Submit tips by texting 847-411 or calling 1-833-560-2065. Although we talked about a few theories of what could be happening in the area and raised awareness in regards to the human trafficking corridor in South Dakota, we don't know what happened to any of these people. And that's part of the issue. What is really going on in South Dakota?
Thank you for listening to We Are Resilient. For links to information found for this episode, you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at We Are Resilient Podcast. Send us an email at weareresilientpod@gmail.com or visit us at www.war-podcast.com.